the J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell and this, the second episode of the new year, is our J2 transfer special in which we'll run through the major ins and outs in the second tier with the start of the 2014 season less than a month away. We'll also discuss the inaugural J3 season and touch on the revamped JFL. Stuart Smith of the We Are Gifu blog and John Steele of J2 Kanto Bites on JapanFooty.com have joined me. Firstly, Stuart, how are you? And thanks for doing double duty after also appearing on the J1 Transfer Special Pod with Angus McLeod.
No worries, Ben. Double pay, right?
Yes, I think we're still in negotiations, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll have to conclude them soon. The window shuts. But yeah, I'm glad to be back on and glad to be talking about J2.
Excellent stuff. And John, Happy New Year. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you, mate?
Hi, Ben. Yeah, very well, thanks. Happy New Year to you and Stuart and all the listeners. Yeah, I hope everyone's had a nice winter.
Fantastic. And have your juices started flowing yet, John, with the new season so close?
I'd say I'm bubbling under nicely. I've been following the off-season transfers as best I can with having a very hyperactive nine-month-old son to deal with as well. But yeah, I'd say by the time of the big kickoff, I'll be, yes, juices will be flowing in full order.
All right, tremendous stuff. Let's jump right in to the major transfers across J2, and I don't think there's anywhere we can start except with the mighty FC Gifu, Stuart. Your club's front office have shown they mean business after a second from bottom finish in 2013 by bringing in some very big guns indeed.
Well, I think the only place to start is the coach. Rui Ramos is in town, and wouldn't you just know it, everybody's talking about it. I see people all over the city and people who... And some of them didn't even realise last year that Gifu had a J-League team, but now they're coming up to me and saying, oh yeah, I can't wait to go to the first game, or I can't wait to see Ramos on the bench, or I can't wait to see Kawaguchi, who's signed, and Santos. So yeah, it's been an amazing turnaround. I've never seen so much FC Gifu coverage. It's been on Fuji Network, it's been on all the TV channels, and yeah, it's just been a crazy kind of 2 months.
Is this a case, Stuart? I know your club had some fairly significant financial problems within the last year or so. Is this a matter of the club investing money to make even more back? I mean, they must be paying Ramos, Kawaguchi and Santos a fair whack of money, but they must be confident that they can get a good return on their investment.
Yeah, and well, Ramos is on a 3-year contract at Gifu, and Kawaguchi and Santos are both on 2-year contracts, and they're not paying peanuts by any stretch of the imagination. But the thinking is that you have to spend money to make money, and we can sit down and we can argue about the value of having players like Kawaguchi in the team or Santos in the team, or we can talk about all the other kind of veteran players that have come in, people like Masashi Miyazawa, Takachi, Keisuke Ota. They've all come in, and they may not be top players, but they're players who ignite the imagination, and they've it's just sparked an interest in the club that, well, even 3 months ago, it would scarcely have been believable. So it's a lot of it is marketing, you have to admit, but hopefully the marketing and the money that the big names are bringing in will help the club off the field and, importantly, on the field as well. That's the main hope, I think.
Stuart, which, if any, of the new players do you think will underwhelm, and who do you think will be the most successful?
That's a good question. I'll go with Masashi Miyazawa to underwhelm. So Gifu have a lot of decent midfielders, not great midfielders, as evidenced by their 21st place finish last year, but I'm not sure that Miyazawa will bring that much to the team, and I wouldn't want him to take up a position that could be filled by someone like Tsukasa Masayama, who's a really good holding midfielder, or Hidemi Jinoshizono, who's back from a serious injury. I'll say Miyazawa for being slightly underwhelmed. For someone who could help Gifu, I'll go for Kawaguchi, because I think he's old, but for goalkeepers it doesn't really matter that much, I don't think, and he seems to have kept himself in tip-top shape, and he'll just bring a good, very good element of experience and organisation to Gifu's defence. So I'll go for, I think Kawaguchi will have a big impact, and I think making him captain was probably a reasonably smart move by whoever chose him, whether it was Ramos or whether it was anyone else on the staff. I think that was a good choice.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating, especially I'd see that they're opening up with two back-to-back home games. And they both look very winnable, Kamatamori Saneki and Katala Toyama. So I think maybe, by mid-March, we're going to know a lot more about the team,
Well, I don't think they could have handpicked a better start. I think if they were after a start which could get them off on the right foot, then this is it. Because this first game against Kamatamare Sanuki, as long as the extraneous situations are okay, i.e. the weather, i.e. the traffic, i.e. any other number of things, they're going to be looking at least 12,000 there, I think. I spoke to a club official earlier on in the week, and he said that he hoped there'd be 15,000 there.
Wow.
In the first game, and
I didn't even know there were that many people in Gifu. Well, and I'm not even joking. That'd be incredible.
It would be, and if you think of like last year when Gamba came to town, there were, I think there were just over 11,500. If they managed to get something approaching 12,000, 13,000, or even 14,000 for the first home game, I think that would be an incredible atmosphere at the stadium. And should they win that game, then, I mean, like I said, I don't think they could have handpicked a better start.
I see your tweet the other day, Stuart, that there were 500 people turned up to watch. Was it a training match or just a training session?
Training session. It was an open training session on a Saturday. And, the training ground was completely overwhelmed. They didn't know what to do. There were like 200 cars there for a parking lot that held 30, and it was just chaos there. But also at that actual training session, I was told that Kawaguchi, Santos, Ramos, and all the new players stayed around to sign every single autograph that was asked of them. They didn't like say they were too busy. They didn't stop after 10 or 11 autographs. They stayed around and they signed for everyone. And I think that's probably, it's expected of them, but it's also a good thing as well, because it builds that bond between the club and the players. And, it's 500 people for a training sessions. That's Premier League stuff, that.
All right. Well, definitely shapes as a fascinating season for Gifu, and as you said, guys, the two home games to begin the season, and obviously Kamatamare Saneki's first ever J2 game, so they'll be bringing probably as many people as they can squeeze into the away end at Nagaragawa. Shapes as a fascinating opener. Let's move on, gents, to the three teams that were relegated from J1 last year. A couple of them have been fairly quiet, but Jubilo Iwata have been doing quite a lot of business both in and out of the club. It felt like I mentioned them probably the most of any team in the J1 transfer special, Stuart, even though they're now down in J2. A lot of players coming in or going out. Probably the biggest name coming in is Daisuke Matsui, Stuart. He returns to the J-League after 10 years playing in Europe, in France, Russia, Bulgaria, and Poland. His most recent club was Lechia Gdansk in Poland. What do you think he's got left in the tank that he can offer Iwata?
Well, he should have enough in the tank for J2, you'd think. I mean, it's not as if he's been away playing like Sunday league football. He's been playing in the top leagues across Europe, and even though I think he's... Well, I'm not sure how old he is, actually. He must be 32, 33, maybe even going on older than that. But he should have enough about him, and he should be in good enough physical condition to be a key component of that Jubilo side. Also, I'm happy that Popo's back in J2, not because I don't think he's good enough for J1. I'm really happy to see him back with his cannon. He's just his shoot on sight policy, and I think he'll do well for Jubilo this year. So those two, Daisuke Matsui and Popo, I think will be very, very important for Jubilo, and I think they'll provide a lot of the creative and forward spark for them. I know he's not flavour of the month for Gamba or Osaka fans, but I dare say Yosuke Fujigaya will do reasonably all right between the sticks for Jubilo as well.
Do you see them as front runners, John? They've lost to Kawaguchi and Shuta Yamamoto to Kashima, among others. There are a couple of other the fringe players who left, but significantly they managed to hang on to Hiroki Yamada and also Ryoichi Maeda.
Yeah, I think of the three relegated teams, they stand out to me as being the most likely to go straight back up. On Matsui, he is 32, Stuart, you were right. But I didn't realise, apparently Popo's 35. I think the only thing I'd say about those two in that case is I know Matsui's had injury problems in the past that have kept him out of his teams in Europe for reasonably long spells. So just if they are going to be integral for Jubilo this season, they just need to make sure that perhaps those two both stay fit. And obviously, the level of the standard of football in J2 might be lower than Matsui's used to, but there are a lot of games, so I think fitness might be an issue perhaps for both of them.
I think it's interesting what Jubilo have done, because they've gone in a different way than, say, Consadole Sapporo did when they were relegated last year. Consadole just jettisoned the majority of their experienced players and focused on like bringing in younger players and promoting people through their youth teams. But Jubilo have gone with the thinking that experience will get them through this division. Like they've kept, like Ben said, they've kept Maeda, they've still got Komano, they've got Popo, they've got Matsui. That's a lot of experience, and it'll be interesting to see how that particular path works out for them. I'm not sure. I don't think they'll do a Gamba, quote unquote. I don't think they'll run away with the league, but I would probably consider them slight early favourites to finish champions in J2 next year.
Mm. All right, well, Oita Trinita finished rock bottom of J1 last season. They haven't done an awful lot in the transfer market. They sold Masashi Miyazawa to FC Gifu, and big striker Yasuhito Morishima moved to Kawasaki. But that's pretty much it, I think, for Trinita as far as the big names go. Of course, as we mentioned in the J1 special, Stuart, Ricky Matsuda, the youngster who had not signed professional terms but was playing as a special J-League designated trainee with Oita last season, moved on to Nagoya. So they might struggle to challenge at the sharp end of J2, I would have thought. And the third relegated team last year was Shonan, who, of course, finished in 16th spot. We mentioned it again in the J1 special that centre mid Hankook Young and Kaoru Takayama, their exciting winger, both moved to Kashiwa Reysol. They've signed Yota Akimoto, a goalkeeper from Ehime, and speaking of Kashiwa, forward Kosuke Takatomi's loan has been extended at Shonan, Stewart.
Yeah, Akimoto was one of the numerous goalkeepers on the move, but I think he was one of the better keepers in J2 last year. I think he'll do really well at Shonan. I think, did they have some kind of crazy Brazilian goalkeeper last year?
Yes, Alex Santana.
Alex Santana.
Well, I think Akimoto proved his worth at Ehime. He was really, really good for them, so I think he'll do well there. Takatomi, I'm not sure how well he played in J1 last year, but I know the last time he was in J2, he scored, I think, 15 goals for when he was on loan in Kumamoto. So he's got previous in J2, and with Shonan being a rather open and attacking side, I think he'll do well, actually. Yeah, I like both of those sidings for Shonan.
All right, John. Well, we're moving into your wheelhouse here. Shonan, of course, in the Kanto area. So what do you think of Belmare's off-season dealings? And then, if you like, you can move on to Chiba, Tokyo Verde, and Yokohama FC.
Okay. Shonan, I think, I don't really see that, like Stuart mentioned, I don't really see the style of the team changing much based on the players that they've brought in. So I think they have probably got enough to be in and around maybe the top six area with the players they've got. Perhaps they'll add one or two more before the window closes. Very quickly on Oita, their squad seems a little bit light to me. They seem short of players. Most of the other squads I've got written down seem to have five or six more players available, so I think they might find it hard going, maybe mid-table at best for them. Very similar at Jeff, I think. They don't really have too many new players coming in, so I think it's generally going to be more of the same. I think the only thing I'd mention for Jeff is that they've lost what I thought was maybe the best player last season, Koki Yonekura. He's moved into J1 with Gamba Osaka, so he'll be a big miss for them. Also, sadly for me, a player I really enjoyed watching, Masaki Fukai, I think by mutual consent his contract's been cancelled because of his ongoing injury problems. I hope to see him back, maybe not at Jeff, but, you know, plying his trade somewhere in the future. He's a really exciting player when he's fit. Jeff did struggle a little bit central defence last season at times, and they brought in two, I'm not sure if they can play at central defence, but two new defenders from Yokohama Marinos in J1. That's Amano, who's on loan, and Tashiro. It's a permanent move, so I'll be interested to see how they slot in to the defence this year.
On Jeff, I'd say that they brought in Taisuke Nakamura from Montedio. Now, he plays on the left-hand side of defence, notionally, but he's not shy in getting forward, and he last year he was one of the best in the division at providing chances, and Montedio Yamagata were one of the most exciting teams last year, and that's a large part of that is because Taisuke Nakamura, his left-footed delivery and his bombing down the left-hand side is sometimes undefendable. He's like all of good attacking fullbacks. He's very suspect defensively, but he gives a lot more going forward. And if they can get him into the team, and if they can get him involved early on, he can be a very good source. And I think they've kept hold of Kempes, right? And they've still got Morimoto's there. They still have some attacking talent, and I think Nakamura will provide plenty of chances for those players to try and take.
I think that's a good shout, Stuart, because I should have also mentioned that Shunki Takahashi, who was the kind of first choice left back last year, his loan has finished now, so he's not available for Jeff next season. So I'd imagine, although Nakamura is listed as a midfielder on my squad sheet here, I'm sure you're right. I think he'll be probably be the left-sided defender kind of raiding forward, especially in home games. He could be an important player for them, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, next to Tokyo Verde, then, and they have some very significant outs and only one seemingly significant in, Naoya Tamura arriving from the Galta Sendai, but there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than we know about, gents. They've basically been shelled, loads of players leaving.
Yeah, I think for Verdi, it's kind of we seem to always mention the same things when we talk about them, but it's the elephant in the room, so we should mention it. Yeah, financially they're in dire straits as ever. We were talking before we started recording that they're still without a kind of main shirt sponsor for the upcoming season. When you consider it's a club that's, you know, based in probably the biggest city in Asia, it's amazing that they haven't got a company you know, willing to sponsor the shirts at the moment. But yeah, in terms of transfers, Naoya Tamura, I'm not really sure. I don't know much about him, so I'm not sure what he's going to add to the team. They also have two players coming back because their loan spells are finished. That's the goalkeeper, Takahiro Shibasaki. His loan at Yokohama FC has ended. And also Kazuki Hiramoto. He was in J1 last year at Vanfire Kofu. He's now back at Verdi. But yeah, like you said, the big stories are probably the transfers out. Seichiro Maki has gone to Raso Kumamoto. Some people might roll their eyes, but he actually turned out to be quite a useful squad player for Verdi last year. So they will have to replace his goals that he scored. And two midfielders, Kazunori Iyo and Junki Koike, they've both made an intriguing move, in my opinion. They've gone to Yokohama FC, so just a short hop into Kanagawa for them. But again, I think they'll be missed. But the big one I'd like to hear from Stuart and yourself about, Ben, is Shoya Nakajima. He's the kind of the highly talented sort of live wire midfielder forward. He's been sold across the city to FC Tokyo in J1. But the part of the move that really surprised me, he's been loaned straight out to Katala Toyama, J2 rival for next year. Probably that's down to the financial troubles that Verdi are having. You know, they're not in a strong position when it comes to resisting bids for players. Stuart, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it happened so quickly. Nakajima went to Tokyo and then almost immediately he was loaned out to Toyama. It seems it had been in place for, I don't know if it's for a while or if Tokyo already knew that he was going to them and they were already approaching potential suitors for Nakajima, but that turn of events did happen pretty quickly. I don't really know a lot about Nakajima because I didn't really see a lot of him last year, but what I do know is that he's gone to Katale Toyama, and they, if they get things going, they've got the Korean, and I mentioned this in the J1 pod as well, but I'll mention it again. They've got Seo Yong-duk, I can never pronounce that name correctly, but the Korean attacking midfielder who provides, and they've got Shirasaki, who's on loan from Espoirs, who scored 5 goals in his last 10 games last year, and then they've also got Kokeguchi, who scored a hat-trick at Vispa last year, who ended up with 11 league goals. So if you add Nakajima in there, suddenly they don't look so shabby going forward. And it's a different issue, but Katale Toyama's defence is very suspect. But if Katale give him a chance, then I think Nakajima might start to blossom there.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm wary of singing his praises too much because he's a very young player, but he's certainly you know, very talented, and he's got a lot of potential. I was impressed with him again. He was playing for Japan's under-22s, I think, over the winter in there. Was that a World Cup? Was that an Asian Cup tournament? I'm not sure, but I saw him. Yeah, he impressed me again in those games. So I think he's really got the potential to go on and be a great player. And I think if he keeps clear of injuries and he keeps developing the way he has done over the last few years, it's a name that I think we're going to hear a lot more about in the future. I was just a little bit surprised if I totally understand FC Tokyo, you know, buying the player because he's available, and you know, obviously they don't have plans for him yet because he's not the finished article or, you know, the squad's already full for this year, so they want to loan him out. Yeah, I was just a bit surprised to see him go to Toyama, because he's already kind of settled in at Tokyo Verde and, you know, lives in the area. It seems strange to send him somewhere where, you know, he might potentially harm his chances. He might be, you know, might be homesick. He's going far away. I don't know what the training facilities are like at Toyama, for example. But, you know, I would think if you've just signed a player, you want to keep them a little bit closer so you can keep an eye on how they're developing, you know, on a more regular basis, especially if it's a young player like they have here. But I don't know. Maybe I'm underestimating. Maybe there's other forces at work that I'm not aware of. But it did remind me of a transfer from a few years back, which was a similar, which is Hiroki Kawano, who was kind of a big rising star at Tokyo Verde based on a kind of one good season. And he moved across the city to FC Tokyo. And then, Ben, he completely disappeared. What have you done with him? Where is he?
Well, yeah, he has had a lot of problems with injuries, John, over the last couple of seasons. We've really only seen him in short spurts, and I mean, he was probably Tokyo's best player in the preseason last year. But
really?
I think he struggled to gain the trust of the past two managers that Tokyo have had, and whether the new guy, Mr. Ficadenti, will place a bit more faith in him, that remains to be seen. But I think he started. Almost all of Tokyo's training matches up until now, so maybe that will be the case, and yeah, Kawano will finally be able to show what he can really do in the top division. But all right, well, yeah, so Tokyo Verde have lost a lot of players. You mentioned two of them have moved to Yokohama FC, John. They've also signed a Toshihiro Matsushita from Vigelta Sendai, who I know quite well. He spent a season at FC Tokyo and didn't do much at all. But, yeah, since moving to Sendai, he'd been an important member of their squad. And, he could be an interesting signing for them.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Yokohama FC have been very busy in terms of player turnover, lots of ins and outs. They do seem to have modified the transfer policy this season. Previously, the manager, Motohiro Yamaguchi, he's been there for around 18 months. He's never had much time for imported Brazilian players. When he came on board, I think Roberto was just losing his kind of long battle with injury, and he retired. And the other Brazilian player at the club was a forward there, Caio, who very quickly was kind of frozen out and then moved on, moved out of the club. But this close season, they've gone mad. I don't know whether it's the World Cup influence or what, but they've brought in three new Brazilian players, two defenders, Douglas and Felipe, and brilliantly a forward named Ronaldo. So we'll see how they get on. They've also done some strengthening, you know, as well as the Brazilian players in defence. Takuya Nagata has come in from Urawa Reds. I think I'm expecting he will probably play at left back, or maybe, you know, in the central defence. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. And also they have a new goalkeeper, Yuta Minami's come in from Kumamoto. I don't know much about him. But the main players they've lost have been, yeah, they've lost one goalkeeper. That's last season's captain, actually, Junosuke Schneider. This season he's going to play at Fujieda, in the J3, I believe. They also got rid of the frankly useless Yutaka Tahara. I think he's gone out to a team in Thailand. But I think the players they've lost, they'll be disappointed with. The fans would be Yuto Takeoka. He's gone to Kawasaki Frontale in J1. And last season's top scorer, a big favourite of mine, Tetsuya Okubo, he had some kind of behind-the-scenes falling out with the coach last year. But he is one of an elite band of players actually joining Tochigi this winter. Most players are leaving Tochigi, but he's coming in on loan. So I hope he does well there, because I like him as a player. But these new guys, you know, Ronaldo, etc., they'll have to replace his goals, I think, this season. But I don't really see, because I don't know much about these players, I don't really know how they'll do. But I think probably Yokohama, the optimism will be a little bit higher because they've got so many new players, but they might take a while to settle, I think. Stuart, do you know much about any of these players? Yuta Minami, for example, I don't know much about him.
Well, he was Kumamoto's first choice goalkeeper last year, and well, he never particularly stood out for me as being good enough for a playoff or championship challenging team. But I don't know. Sometimes a change is as good as a rest, so he might come in and do well there. Well, I think you segued well into Tochigi SC with their signing of Okubo. And, well, as Ben referred to previously, they've had a horrific off-season. Another club that has startling financial problems. And first, I'm just going to read the list of players that have left Tochigi this off-season. So Cristiano, scorer of 16 league goals, has moved to Vanfori Corfu. Sabia, scorer of 16 league goals, has made the good move to Matsumoto Yamaga. Paulinho, team captain and one of the best midfielders in J2, has moved to Kawasaki Frontale. Alex Santos, dressing room leader, has moved to Gifu. Takafumi Toma, one of the best defenders in J2 last year, has moved to Monterrey Yamagata. And another one is the midfielder Kikuoka, who was virtually an ever-present last year and has got a mean set piece delivery on him. He's moved to Consadole Sapporo. I fear for Tochigi. You can't take almost half a team out gutted like that and expect them to continue as they were. I think they'll be somewhere down the bottom, if not in the bottom two, come the end of the season. It's just a horrific situation there. I can't see how they can do anything else but struggle this year. Yeah, I don't know what you guys think about
Well,
that.
They've lost all those players, Stuart, and all they've done is brought in Tetsuya Okubo and some Doodoo.
Oh, yes. And Doodoo's all right, but, I mean, he comes in from Gainare Tottori, who were even more horrific than Gifu last year, so that should tell you the kind of player that they're bringing in. They're just... Tochigi, they're massive. They were hemorrhaging money come the end of last year, and they're not going to get any better for this year, I don't think. And yeah, I worry for them. I worry for them this year.
I think Tochigi did a very unusual thing, both in business generally, but especially in Japan, which is they came out and were very upfront and just said, look, the club is in desperate trouble. We're totally changing our club policy to focus on young players, and we're selling off all the high earning players, which I think is probably the case at many other clubs that we just don't know about, because they keep it under wraps. But I think Tochigi, in some ways, were brave to come out and be so upfront about the problems. But also, I think that hints that the financial trouble there was so big that they knew they wouldn't be able to keep it secret, and they'd have to kind of come clean, if you like, and hold the hands up. So yeah, I agree with what's been said. I think they will struggle. Looking at my list here, they've got 10 new players coming in. Only two of them are on permanent deals. Two players are straight out of university, and the other six are all loan deals. So I'm not sure if there's a limit on the number of loans that one team can have.
That seems a lot.
You have six players on loan. Yeah. Well, in the English Premier League, for example, you're only allowed two loan deals at once. So obviously, I appreciate we're not talking about the Premier League now, but I mean, that would raise questions for me. Are all those players going to be committed? Are they all going to roll their sleeves up when, you know, the going is tough, which it is going to be for most of the season? That'll be very interesting to see what morale is like there amongst the fans as well as the players.
All right. Well, we've managed to go on this podcast for well over 30 minutes, and we haven't even mentioned Shinji Ono yet, guys. He's making the move from Western Sydney Wanderers up to Sapporo to play for Consadole, but there's a bit of a caveat to that, Stuart.
There is. He will be arriving after the finish of the A-League season, so I think he'll be arriving back in Japan sometime at the end of June, and I think they're expecting him to play towards the end of July. The club are expecting him to start contributing then. I think it's a fantastic signing for not only Sapporo, but the league in general. I mean, it's turning into a Japanese national team reunion, quite honestly. You got Ono, you got Takahara at Verdy, the Gifu group are there. But Shinji Ono has lost probably none of his playmaking powers, and I think Consadole are they're looking like one of the better sides this year. If they can stay in around the top six for the time that Ono is not there, when he comes in, he could be the catalyst for a serious run at promotion. What I would say about Consadole as well is that they've signed the best goalkeeper in J2. They signed Junki Kanayama from Nagasaki last year, and that's a fantastic signing for them. He will shore up that back line, and yeah, you heard it here first. Consadole, I think I'll come out and say it now. I think they'll get promoted next year. Yikes. Can you edit that bit out? I don't know.
That's staying, sure. That's staying.
I think they've got everything going for them. Like I said earlier on, they made this decision when they were relegated from J1 after their horrible season there. They decided to go with youth, and they decided to get rid of their kind of experienced players and their high earning players, and they brought in lots of young players they promoted from their academy, and I think this season will be the season that it pays off. And they just missed out on the playoffs last year. I see playoffs as a minimum for them this year.
Yeah, I think Stuart's probably right. I think Kanayama is an excellent goalkeeper, and he'll do a lot to help them out with the back. If there's any doubt about how highly regarded he was at Nagasaki, they went out and brought in three new goalkeepers during the winter. Someone should tell them they're not all going to be able to play at once. But yeah, the only thing I'd mention on Ono, and I'm kind of, it's the same drum that I was banging about Daisuke Matsui and Popo earlier, is just, you know, if he's played a full season in the A League, and then he's going to come over and play in J2. I'm not saying that his body can't take it, but if they're pinning all their hopes on this one guy, and then he comes over and, you know, does his hamstring or something in the first game, and then everything's kind of flat, I think that could have a negative impact on the team. Having said that, I do think, like Stuart mentioned, there are a lot of other good players around. They would have been in the playoffs last year if they hadn't had such a dreadful start, where I think they lost three or four of the first five home games, maybe even more. They were rubbish at home at the start of last year. If they just picked up another point or two in that run, then they would have been in the playoffs at the end. So I think, yeah, they're definitely a team to watch. I'm not as confident as Stuart is about their chances, but definitely they're two really good signings, you know, fitness permitting, for Shinji Ono.
All right, well, that's 9 of the 22 J clubs transfer dealings reviewed, I believe. We don't have time to do all of them in as much detail, of course. So, Stuart, were you able to pick out another club's dealings in particular, or certain transfers here or there that caught your eye this off season?
Yeah, I think Matsumoto Yamaga's signing of Sabia from Tochigi is a very good signing. If there's one complaint about Matsumoto last year, it's that they were goal shy and they were slightly conservative, because they were too reliant on Takayuki Funayama. But bringing in Sabia gives them an extra attacking threat and someone to take the pressure off Funayama. If he can replicate his 16 goals that he scored last year for Tochigi, then Yamaga won't be far away from the top six.
Yeah, I'd just like to add very quickly before I forget on Yamaga, one player that they also brought in is from Nagasaki, Yudai Iwama. The midfielder, I think he could be a really key player as well. I really like him. I think those two signings together will both be really good for Matsumoto.
Yeah, and just moving on to some other clubs, I think there's a couple of strikers who've moved to Kyushu, and their moves are really interesting. I'd like to hear what you guys think, but Giravants have made the signing of Kazuki Hara from Kyoto Sanga and the ex-Espels forward. He scored 12 goals last year, and I think that's a really good signing for Kita Kyushu. Again, they have some good young attacking players. They have Kote Gawa on the wing, they have Ikemoto as the striker as well, and yeah, I think I think Hara will do well there. Another striker who moved to Kyushu is Shoki Hirai from Gamba, the kind of forgotten man there. I know he burst on the scene a couple of years ago, but kind of fell away a little bit. But he's, when he's fit and firing, he's a very dangerous player, I think. And those two strikers down in Kyushu, I think they have the potential to have very good seasons.
I completely agree. I think they'll both be, you know, first choice players if fit for those respective teams. And I think as long as they get given the ball and they get given good service, I'm sure both of them are going to score goals. Especially, I know Hirai, he always seems to have a good game when I watch him. I'm sure he'll do well. And Haro was, as you say, Stuart, he was pretty hot last season when he had chances for Kyoto. So I think both of those players will do well. I also noticed Avis Fukuoka picked up Takumi Abe, the midfielder from Matsumoto Yamaga. I think he's an ex-FC Tokyo man, Ben.
That is correct.
Is that right? Yeah, so I think he'll be a good pickup for Avispa. I'm expecting Avispa to do well this year. The only thing, well, one of the things that counted against them last season was they had an absolutely awful disciplinary record. Every week on the J-League website, they publish a list of suspended players. More than one occasion, I found Avispa having three players suspended at the same time. So I'm not sure, you know, what they're on down there. But as long as they can just keep out of the referee's way a little bit more, I'm sure they'll do well with these new players.
And just one more from Kyushu, like Nagasaki with the story of last year, they had a tremendous season.
Mm.
I think they've done reasonably well. They've picked up Hiroshi Azuma from Ehime, who kind of a very, very underrated player last year for Ehime. A good holding midfielder, but can also pick a pass as well. And one player that I'm really, really hoping can kick on is Yuya Nakamura. Now, he, 2 years ago, he was a standout for Honda FC in the JFL. He was the next big thing and earned himself a move to Kyoto. But within the first month of the season, he pulled his hamstring and never quite made his way back in the team, but he is an excellent player, and I hope Nagasaki can get the best out of him, because if they can, and they've picked him up on a free transfer because he was out of contract at Kyoto, they'll have picked themselves up an absolute gem of a player.
Mm-hmm. I think Nagasaki will miss Shuto Kono, who's his loan spell from, is it from FC Tokyo?
Yep, that's right, John.
Yeah, Shuto Kono was a really important, very versatile squad player for them last year. And again, he was another one playing in the same under-22 team as Shoyu Nakajima over the winter break. So I think they have made some good signings, but he will leave a little bit of a gap to be filled, I think.
So, John, were there any other transfers that caught your eye before we wrap this section up and move on to talk about J3?
Yeah, there's just two more kind of Japan old boys. It seems to be a theme in J2 this season. There's a lot of, you know, players that are basically making me feel old, because I can remember when they were in and around the Japanese national team. Masashi Ogoro has gone on loan from a Chinese team to Kyoto Sanga. So he'll be bringing his unique brand of dressing room harmony, you know, to Kansai this season. And a player who's a real blast from the past for me personally is Kazuki Ganaha, the Okinawan Wonder Boy. He's back in the J-League with Kamatamare Saniki in their debut J2 season. When I first came to Japan, he was the big star at the team closest to me, the Kawasaki Frontale. And obviously his career suffered a real setback when he had a lengthy ban for a kind of controversial drug violation or doping violation, which was a very murky situation. So I'm really pleased to see him back in the J-League, and I'm sure he's lost some of his pace and some of his hair, but yeah, I'll be cheering him on, because I always thought he was a player that I loved to watch when he was in his pomp.
All right, thanks, John, and thank you as well to Stuart. That's our wrap-up of the major J2 transfers that have taken place up until now, the end of the first week of February. We'll take a break for just a few seconds, and then we'll come back to discuss the inaugural season of J3. Back in a moment.
Yes, 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 yes.
in 2014. J3 will debut. 12 clubs taking part in the new division of the J-League. And just quickly running through the list of clubs, Gainare Tottori, who of course were relegated from J2 in 2013. 9 clubs from the JFL, Blaublitz Akita, Yokohama Sports and Culture Club, Machida Zelvia, SC Sagamihara, Nagano Parcero, Zweigen Kanazawa, FC Ryukyu, Fujieda Mai FC, Fukushima United, Grulja Morioka from the Tohoku League, and this J-League Under-22 selection. Gents, where is your focus here? John, are we going to see a J3 Kanto Bites at any stage this season?
I think family commitments will prevent me from going full throttle in that regard. I might be able to spin it off into some sort of franchise system. But yeah, I think I'll be looking very closely at YSCC, Yokohama Sports and Culture Club, to see how they do, because it was the information I had was that their application to join the J3 and to get the J3 license would be refused. So I was quite surprised when they were accepted. So I'll be interested to see what happens with them. And obviously Machida Zelvia is a club that I followed very closely when they were in J2. A few seasons back, so I'll be interested to see if they can, make it back into J2 in this brand new melting pot of 12 unusual teams.
All right, Stuart, what about yourself? Which clubs have you got your eye on as J3 looks set to get going?
I think I'll be focusing my attention on last season's JFL winners and Emperor's Cup heroes. Nagano Parcero. I think once again they'll be the team to be. Just quickly, they've added hotshot Shunta Takahashi, who started the season on fire at FC Ryukyu last year before cooling off. But they're going to pair him and last season's JFL top scorer Yuji Unozawa together. I think it'll take a good team to stop them, and I don't see how they won't finish top of the league next year.
All right, Stuart. We had a question on Twitter today from at Naoetsu Cafe from Ludub. The question was, will Nagano be promoted to J2 if they win the third tier again this year? Do we have a definitive answer to that yet?
We don't have a definitive answer yet, but all signs point to yes, but there's a huge caveat there in that they're in the process of building their brand new stadium, which from the pictures that have been released of it looks an absolute gem of a stadium, but it all depends on how far along they are when the J-League come to inspect their stadium. I think I read that it was planning to be opened in February of 2015, which is if it's open at the start of February, that's only 1 month before the J-League season begins, and they should be eligible, but it really does depend on how far they've progressed with their stadium construction. So hopefully they will be, but it is slightly up in the air.
Okay, John, and Gainare Tottori, of course, were relegated from J2 when they lost the promotion relegation playoff against Kamatamare Sanuki. They'll be swanning around J3, I guess, with their tails between their legs, even though that doesn't really make sense. How do you see that Tottori will get on?
I think that there's a lot of big talk on the club website and in the comments, obviously, from the staff there about how they're planning to come straight back to J2. I don't think they've been in J2 already, so I don't think they'd have any problems with the club licensing situation. I'm sure they would be allowed back in if they finish high enough up the table. But I think the club's in quite a real mess off the pitch, to be honest. They should, how they ended up getting relegated last year is still kind of a mystery to me. So I think they probably will benefit from having some time to just get themselves straightened out in J3. I think Stuart's right. I think Nagano will be the team to beat. And although football isn't usually this simple, I can see it being a kind of shootout between Nagano and Machida Zelvia in the top two positions. But maybe there's another team that can spring a surprise and get in between them. But for me, it's those two who'll be the two big hitters, the heavy hitters in the J3.
I'd just like to very quickly mention one of John and I's favourite Twitter hashtags is TsujiWatch, referring to Masao Tsuji, the top scorer from the JFL in 2012, who had a horrible time at Gainare Tottori last year, but he's resurfaced with Zweigen Kanazawa, and he's leading their line this year, and I'd be very interested to see how he gets on this year. He's already proven at this level, so hopefully for the team up in Kanazawa, he can replicate the 2012 form as opposed to his 2013 form.
You do realise you've set us both up to look silly for a second year in a row now, Stuart.
Don't worry about it. I'm all over it.
You're confident. Okay.
All right, and all of the details are still not yet known about the J League Under 22 selection. What we do know now is that players will be selected on the Friday and travel to the away ground of wherever the J League Under 22s will be playing on the Sunday. They'll train together on the Saturday, play a game on the Sunday, and then go back to their parent club and probably do it all over again the next Friday. The three of us made our feelings on that team's entrance into J3 fairly well known towards the end of the 2013 season. So, yeah, we won't rehash that or those opinions at the moment, but I think it's safe to say that the three of us are all still perplexed that this is going ahead in the first place. But again, just to mention, the J League Under 22 side will play all their matches away. Finally, on this episode of the J Talk podcast, let's briefly discuss the new JFL season. Of course, 10 of the clubs who contested the Japan Football League in 2013 have gone up to either J3 or, in Sanuki's case, up to J2. The JFL decided then to introduce 6 new clubs as the league will hopefully stabilise at 14 clubs. Stuart, you're the JFL expert here. Take it away, son.
So there are going to be, like you said, 6 new clubs in the JFL. I'll quickly run through them for you. They are Fujiano Okayama Next, which is the feeder club for J2 side, Fujiano Okayama. There's Kagoshima United, who are a merger of FC Kagoshima and Volca Kagoshima, who were both in the Kyushu League last year. Vanraure Hachinohe, I hope I pronounced that right.
Very, very well done.
Thank you. They were in the Tohoku League last year.
That's Aomori Prefecture, right?
It is. They are representing Honshu's northernmost prefecture.
Yep.
Hashtag geography. then there's Aso Claro Numazu, who were in the Tokai League last year. And I just want to plug a Twitter account, which is Alive in Kochi. If you're interested in Numazu's fortunes in the JFL, that's the account to follow. Also, a fellow Tokai League team, Mariyasu, who rebranded to Mariyasu Okazaki, they won the Tokai League last year. And finally, Renofa Yamaguchi, who are in the Chugoku League, and they will bring their resplendent orange kits into the JFL next year. So, in the JFL this year, there is the universally popular two-stage system they're implementing, and obviously that means in the first stage everyone will play together, in the second stage everyone will play together, then the two stage winners will have a playoff to see who wins the JFL. Regarding promotion to the J3 2015, there are potentially two teams that can get promotion, as long as A, finish in the top four, and B, they have a J League associate member license. So there is the potential for two of these clubs that are participating in the JFL this year to attain J3 status come 2015. So there's a lot to play for, and with the new clubs in the league, it will be another interesting season in the JFL.
And when you say top four, Stuart, you mean aggregate points over the two stages, i.e. the entire year?
Yes, absolutely. So the stage winners will play each other to see who wins the JFL championship, super stage, happy set, whatever.
But if the eventual JFL champion doesn't have an associate member's license, obviously they can't go up to J3 no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're looking at clubs that are corporate clubs. So, I don't know, like Honda FC,
sure.
Sagawa Printing, Kyoto, or Sony Sendai. Those are the kind of teams that can't go up. But so if they finish in the top four, then it's a moot point. But if teams, for example, like Miyo Biwako Shiga, Yokogawa Musashino, Kagoshima United, they'd have to apply for J-League associate member license, but if they got that and finished in the top four, then they would be eligible for J3 promotion.
I think if I can just very briefly mention, I've been to watch Yokogawa Musashino a few times, and the information I have from one or two fans that I talked to there is that they are a long way away from applying for any kind of J3 license, primarily because of things related to attendance, but also the club structure in terms of their front office and also how many players they have on certain contract types. So I think that would be a long way away for that club in particular. But I don't know anything about the other teams that Stuart mentioned, really.
Well, you know that Yokogawa Musashino have a player called Keisuke Honda
playing yeah,
in the midfield.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. But I think that on its own won't offset the fact that they usually only get about 300 fans. Yeah. See, we've got Keisuke Honda and Ronaldo. That's in J2, so that's a good... It's going to be a good year, I can feel it.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I'll be able to put Keisuke Honda's name on the poster promoting this podcast now, so that's an excellent way to finish, I think, gents. So, yeah, that's our J2 transfer special / brief J3 preview / brief JFL preview wrapped up. Thanks very much, again, as I mentioned at the start, Stuart, for doing double duty on these transfer special podcasts, and I'll speak to you again soon, I hope.
Yeah, anytime, Ben. It's a pleasure.
And yeah, John, it was fantastic to speak to you again, and we certainly will be doing so soon as well, I hope. And great to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, you too, Ben. I'm looking forward to the season, so we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks again to Stuart and John, and to you for listening wherever you are. Speak to you again soon. Bye for now. Yokohama Sports and Country Club, Machida Zelvia. I said Country Club, sorry.